1590 WSMN Nashua's News and Talk presents We Hold These Truths, hosted by Karen Testament, founder of First Principles New Hampshire, an organization that promotes those truths that are self-evident, which the state and the nation were founded upon. The show takes a look at the latest news and developments throughout the state of New Hampshire from a conservative women's viewpoint. Whether it's family, economic, or current news, We Hold These Truths will cover it all. Join the show, give us a piece of your mind, and voice your input by calling 816-0019. It's We Hold These Truths with Karen Testament on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk, and WSMNRadio.com.
Good morning, Nashua. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths on WSMN 1590, Nashua's source for news and talk. I hope you're having a great day and enjoying this lovely, lovely weather. It's cool, brisk out there. The trees are beginning to turn. It's just absolutely gorgeous. One of my favorite times. You can almost taste the apples as you go down the road because it's apple picking time. And you know that when you pull them off those trees, they're nice and crisp and ready to go. And it's also lots of fun because this is when we go out and harvest all of those apples and bring them back and turn them into those delectable desserts like apple crisp or my husband's favorite happens to be apple pie. I like to throw in the cranberries and make it a cran apple. Of course, there's nothing to take the place of homemade apple sauce. And so enjoy. It's a great time. It's also time to get out there and find those pumpkins to start carving. It absolutely amazes me how many different designs we come up with for the pumpkins nowadays. They're just not the little faces, but people have become extremely creative and very artistic. It's a shame you have to throw them away at the end of the day. But anyway, we have a lot to talk about. I don't have a guest in studio with me today, but I will tell you I have a few opinions to throw out towards you, and I hope that you find the information helpful. And then I hope that you also will, at that point, take some action. Secretary of State has gone to the UN and is now signing on to, or has signed on to the U.S. or the UN small arms treaty ban. And what this really is it's an international requirement for everyone to abide by certain laws. And basically, it will infringe upon our rights to keep and bear arms. The United Nations has finalized their details in what they call the Small Arms Treaty. And while the Secretary of State Kerry has signed this, the biggest problem is that if it will or will it not get the full backing of the U.S. Senate. The Senate is required by law in the Constitution to ratify all treaties with a three-quarters or two-thirds vote, which would be two-thirds of the sitting Senate. It doesn't mean that that's two-thirds of 100 senators. It means it's two-thirds of those who are present when they bring this up, which could be dangerous in many respects. And the reason I say that is because Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution says that the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme land, a law of the land, and the judge in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Now, the big question comes in to this clause that's also included in that paragraph. Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution, in the second paragraph, it says, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States. And then it says, shall be the supreme law of the land. So it sounds to me, and I may be wrong in my interpretation, but it certainly sounds to me that this means that while the Constitution and the laws of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, that treaties made which shall be, or that shall be made under the authority of the United States would also take supremacy. So if it says in that UN small arms treaty that this applies to all nations, does that not supersede our Constitution? That is something that we really need to find out. We need to have that debate, that discussion, find out what the story really, really is. What was the original intent of the Founding Fathers? You might be able to find that in the Federalist Papers or the Anti-Federalist Papers, either one. The discussion needs to be had. We need to find out what is really going on here. And in the meantime, I would recommend that you contact your state senators, or not our state senators, but our U.S. senators, Senator Jean Shaheen and Senator Kelly Ayotte, and find out where they stand on this particular item. I know that Senator Shaheen has signed off on the small arms treaty, thinks it's a great idea because of the gun control issue. So let your voices be heard. It's really important. And, you know, the situation out in Colorado where the people got together after two of their state legislators decided that they would, in fact, pass laws that would restrict some of the Second Amendment rights, have been recalled. And it was recalled because the people spoke. And right now, we still have the ability to speak, and so we better exercise it, or as the famous saying goes, you either use it or you lose it. So definitely that's something that needs to be done. Now, the other thing I wanted to cover today was Senator Ted Cruz. Now, Senator Cruz appeared on the floor of the Senate over the last couple of days for 21 hours, carrying on a lengthy discussion. Some called it a filibuster. It really wasn't, in technicality, a filibuster. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about what that really is. What do all of these terms that are being tossed around to and fro? They talk about cloture. They talk about filibuster. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And unless you really know what the rules are for the Senate, then you have no idea what they're talking about. So I thought we would have that discussion this morning. I hope you're ready. Cloture, which is it's a procedure that the Senate can vote into place that puts a time limit on the amount of remaining time for a bill to be discussed. So currently, under the cloture rule, the Senate may limit consideration of a pending matter to 30 additional hours, but only if they get a vote of 3/5 of the full Senate. That means 60 votes. Currently, we have 100 senators, so that's 3/5 would be 60 votes. That means if they are able to have a cloture vote on an issue, just like they did back when on the gun issues, then there's only 30 more hours that you can devote to the discussion of this. That means it has to come to a full Senate vote within a day and a half, or depending upon how many hours. Maybe they spend 10 hours a day. That's 3 days. So, you know, that would be the limitation on how that they have to finish the discussion on that particular issue. Now, then if they don't pass the cloture, what it means is that you can filibuster. Well, using the term filibuster comes from a Dutch word meaning pirate, and it became popular back in the 1850s. The Senate used it in order to prevent a vote on the bill. And basically what it says is this is an exercise of the people in the Senate to be able to discuss a bill for a long period of time. This is your, in technicality, I would say, your freedom to speak, except when the rules, like cloture, limit that. So the idea within the bodies of Congress anyway is that they are supposed to discuss these bills. They're supposed to bring everything up to a full discussion and have it as long as possible. In the state of New Hampshire, for example, one of the things that is so special about us, and maybe this is the forerunner of most of this, is that every bill that is introduced, every LSR that is introduced by a legislator, unless they pull it themselves, will go to get a bill number. Then once they get that bill number, that bill will now go before a committee. The committee will hold a public hearing. That means that you and I can go down and we can say we like this bill or we don't like this bill, and we can, you don't even have to say anything beyond that. You can just register yourself as opposing or being in support of the bill, or you can give a series of arguments, facts, figures, whatever you want to provide to that committee for them to consider why they should or should not pass this particular bill, why this is a bad bill, why this is a good bill. You, the citizens, get to go down and make that case. This is the only state that I know of that you can do this in. By that I mean on every bill that is that comes before the legislature. Every other state, it's up to the committee chairman to decide which bills will have a hearing and which will not, which ones will be put on the calendar, which ones will not. In the state of New Hampshire, we are the only state, to my knowledge, that allows every bill that is submitted by their legislators to be heard by the public, to have a public hearing, and then to be fully voted on by that body. So, by the introducing body. So we really, really, really have something special in this state, and we need to protect it. And so back to Congress, let me give you a little bit of the history. In the early years of Congress, representatives as well as the senators could filibuster. Today, we only hear about the senators. As the House of Representatives grew in numbers, revisions to the House rules limited debate. And in the smaller Senate, because the Senate was a smaller body, only 100, then at this time, it was smaller even then because it you only had two senators for every state, remember. So it was always that much smaller. But the Senate allows for unlimited debate on the grounds that any senator should have the right to speak as long as they wanted to on any issue. But in 1841, there was a Democrat minority was trying to block a bank bill that was promoted by Senator Henry Clay from Kentucky. And he threatened to change the Senate rules to allow the majority to close debate. The Missouri Senator Thomas Benton got after Clay, and he said, you know, you're just trying to stifle the Senate's right to an unlimited amount of time to debate an issue. But in 1917, the senators adopted a rule, rule number 22, that President Woodrow Wilson encouraged them to do, allowing the Senate to end a debate with a two-thirds majority vote. And that is what we now know as cloture. They first used that Senate rule in 1919, and the Senate was had invoked the cloture to end the filibuster against the Treaty of Versailles. Even though they had that new cloture rule, filibusters remained an effective means to block legislation, since it requires two-thirds of the Senate to vote to achieve it, and that's something that's rather difficult to obtain. So usually you have a problem getting that full two-thirds vote. Filibusters were particularly used in this useful to the Southern senators because they were often against the civil rights, the anti-lynching legislation and the civil rights legislation, and they were trying to block those from ever coming about. But Senate reduced the number of votes required for cloture from two-thirds to three-fifths. And so now it's currently 60 of those 100 senators. So, it's reminiscent of the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and in which Jimmy Stewart goes, and remember, he filibustered until he finally collapses at the end of the movie. I don't remember much more about it, but that is something that sticks in the back of your mind when you think about filibustering. And actually, the longest filibuster was 24 hours and 18 minutes. So, and it was against the Civil Rights Act of 1957. And so you see where Senator Cruz, Ted Cruz from Texas, where he goes up onto the floor and talks for 21 hours straight. He's not too far from that record, although I will say that, a minute on to stand up in front of someone and talk, and sometimes, especially when you're not having a conversation, can really take a long time. So, but that's just a little bit of history about what it is about filibustering versus cloture and why it's important. Now, the other thing you need to understand is that while it takes a little bit of effort to get to the cloture vote, those 60 votes, once that cloture vote passes, then any legislation thereafter can be just passed by a majority vote, 51 votes in this particular case. So it, while you filibuster, you do have the ability to block that legislation from coming to a final vote, especially if you don't have the votes to either stall or pass a particular piece of legislation. In the case before us today, we're talking about the medical care, the Affordable Health Care Act called Obamacare. And what the situation is right now is that we have a spending bill, an appropriations bill, and there's a difference. There's one that is the budget that tells where those money should be appropriated, and then there's another bill that comes forward which funds that. Now, what we have is the bill that came forward called a continuing resolution at this time because we do not have a budget at this stage of the game. We have not had a budget since this administration was elected in 2008. We are now working on the fifth year without a budget, even though our current law says that we must have a budget in place by the 30th of September to take so that the next year can be funded and taken care of. And all of this is supposed to be done by the 30th of September. If you're not aware, if you haven't been counting the days, today is the 26th. That means by next Monday, they are by law supposed to have a budget. Over the last several years, 5 years almost counting, the legislature, the Congress, has been putting this off in what they call a continuing resolution. That means that the government will be funded for a short period of time while they buy themselves, kick the can down the road if you want, buy themselves a little bit more time to be able to actually, discuss this and come to some conclusions, to some agreement between the party. So what the House has done is to pass this law, but to take out any funding for Obamacare. And that is about the only way that we are going to be able to defund Obamacare. And there are those who would say that we really ought to support this. And this, again, requires that we get on the phone and call our congressional delegation and let them know what is it that we think they should be doing. And so your senator's phone numbers in Washington for Kelly Ayotte are 202-224-3324. And for Senator Jean Shaheen, it's 202-224-2841. And I'll repeat those as we go forward because I want you to be able to pick up the phone and let your voice be heard. It makes a difference. Again, I call your attention to the situation in Colorado where two legislators were on the record for having voted to limit the citizens of Colorado in their ability to keep and bear arms. And the citizens of Colorado were very effectively had a recall vote on two of their legislators in that action. Here in New Hampshire, we have Representative John Heichel, who has introduced a bill asking that 189 legislators be recalled, in essence, because of their vote on the Stand Your Ground bill, asking which would have impacted your ability to keep and bear arms. And might I say, the whole purpose on keeping and bearing arms is not only to protect yourself and your family and your property, but the underlying idea by the Founding Fathers was that you would be able to, if necessary, if your government, because that's always the possibility, if your government were to become tyrannical in any way and you needed to defend your country, what is now America, against a tyrannical government, one that has gotten out of control, that you would be able to do so. And that is that's the ultimate service of the ability to keep and bear arms. And they fought very stringently for that. There are those also that believe that Harry Reid, he's the Senate president, Harry Reid, will try to sneak Obamacare funding back into the continuing resolution that was put forth by the House. And so voting for cloture on any amendment that funds Obamacare is in essence, would then allow that to happen with a very simple majority, and that is the thing that is so upsetting to most people. Now, why are we worried about Obamacare? I mean, for heaven's sakes, what's the big problem with it? Well, if you go in, according to the health insurance people, the whole purpose of having this Affordable Care Act is that they would be standardizing our health plans, that the government would come in and tell the insurance companies how to make sure that everybody's getting an equal fair share on the insurance plans. You know, what happened to the free market system is something that we probably ought to have a discussion on, and it could be a very healthy, long one. And by the way, if you would like to join this discussion and tell me what you think about all of this, don't just listen to me, but tell me your thoughts. Give us a call at 603-816-0019 to Karen Testerman on We Hold These Truths, sponsored by First Principles of New Hampshire. One of the things that what the Affordable Health Care Act will do in some areas is that we're finding it's going to actually triple premiums. For example, in Tennessee, there was an article that was written that 95% of the nation will be able to buy health care insurance premiums below the earlier projections. That's what the White House is telling us. But the question becomes, if today a 27-year-old man in Memphis can buy a plan for as low as $41 a month, on the health exchange, which we, by the way, in New Hampshire are discussing at this point, on the health exchange, the lower state average is $119 a month. In New Hampshire, it's something like $249 a month, I believe. That, you know, that's insane. In Memphis, or in Nashville, a 27-year-old woman can also buy a plan for as low as $58 a month today on the exchange.